All right, Scott Stevens joins us now, ABC Religion and Ethics Editor, and we're here actually to talk about the Pope's visit to the Holy Land, which has been interesting on a whole lot of levels. But before that, I've just got to ask, Scott, there are ethical conundrums raised, aren't there, by this idea of living to 150?
Enormous ethical conundrums, Waleed. I mean, look, there is actually a very old idea that goes right back to Judaism, that once a son or a daughter is born, the responsibility of the parent is then to find ongoing life in the life and flourishing and destiny of one son or daughter. Anything beyond that is actually a form of almost idolatry undercutting, if you like, the hopes for the future of one's own children. I mean, Not only, I think, is that a very, very serious consideration here, but look, one of the few things that actually unifies Western democracy is that we think, almost all of us, that death is a very, very, very bad thing and we need to do whatever we can to hold it at bay. And as a result, you know, there's this great ethical discussion that's been held for well over 3,000 years about what is the proper shape of one's life. At what point can you begin saying, okay, that life is a life that is shaped like virtue, that is shaped like goodness, and now it's the responsibility to display a kind of final act of courage and to demonstrate to future generations, okay, this is how a good person dies. And so I think, yeah, look, this raises all sorts of enormous questions for me. I'm not going to go into any further.
No, but we should one day, actually, because, I mean, the whole idea of our culture's relationship to death, or lack of relationship to death, I think is a major thing. Of course, on the flip side, if we live till 180, it would mean that Pope Francis would have a good, 83 years left of his papacy. What would he do with it?
Look, well, one can only imagine. He's 77 years old. As most people know, he has one lung, and yet he... he keeps a schedule that really is quite something. His trip to the quote unquote Holy Land is only his second overseas, the second overseas visit of his papacy. And I mean, as you can imagine, Waleed, you know, there's been a huge amount of attention and interest surrounding it. I think more than anything else, there have been two things that are feeding into this. One is the fact that no pope in living memory has gone into the Holy Land with more of a kind of upsurge of global approval behind him. He's not coming off the back of any kind of scandal as Pope Benedict XVI.
So he carries moral authority, not just for Catholics.
Yes, but not just moral authority, he also carries the press with him,
right,
which means that every act, every gesture, but also the way that local leaders respond to him would be infinitely scrutinized by the global media. The other big issue, of course, is that he is a pope that is now renowned for not exactly sticking to the script. And so who knows quite what was going to happen, and already that predilection to depart from the approved schedule generated one of the more interesting and, to my mind, one of the more disturbing elements of this visit.
Well, and particularly when you're talking about Israel and Palestine, the approved script is fairly narrow. I mean, it is very hard to find things to do that will not offend somebody. Indeed, I would argue possibly impossible, because there's that's an odd phrase, because everything is so laden with political symbolism. And the Pope ran into that, didn't he, when he went to Bethlehem, and he had this prayer which got a lot of attention at the wall that Israel had built.
Yes, but you see, what's very interesting about that, Waleed, I mean, look, you know, already there is so much about this. Let me put it this way. The Pope signaled his determination early on, I think, and I think probably rightly. I actually described it on Friday as being a kind of willful naivety. It appeared to me that both with his choice to bring along with him on the visit two longstanding friends from Argentina, Rabbi Abraham Skorka and Imam Omar Aboud, both of whom, you know, decades-long friends from his time as Cardinal of Argentina, there seemed to be an indication, a proposed willingness on his part, that he was going to try to cut diagonally, if I can put it that way, cut diagonally across the tensions, across the political divide, and trying to follow a more distinctly what he would describe certainly as a kind of Christian or Catholic logic, that wherever possible, gestures of reconciliation and friendship, not so much focusing on interfaith relations, as say Pope Benedict might have done, but instead focusing mutual attention, the attention of both parties, Israelis and Palestinians alike, on common goods, on common goals, on common needs. And so I think already there was a kind of intention that he was going to cut diagonally across the divide. That was first signaled by the fact that that very, very soon after meeting with President Mahmoud Abbas, that the papal limousine stopped off very quickly, as you said, before the barrier that separates Israel from the West Bank. And the Pope hopped out, had a few minutes of silent prayer, rested his head against the barrier, then hopped back in and kept going. Now, both sides, as you can imagine, both sides of the divide, Palestinians and Israelis alike, saw this as an extremely provocative act, that it was somehow a gesture of solidarity with the Palestinians themselves. It was no wonder then that the very next day, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu insisted that, almost as a kind of quid pro quo, that the Pope visit the memorial to the victims of terror on Mount Zion. And in fact, Benjamin Netanyahu came out very, very publicly the next day and said, the Pope did that because I requested that he do it. And I think, you know, this sort of peacefulness, this attempt at gestures of authentic friendship and even hopefully reconciliation on both sides or towards both sides, this did at certain points, I have to confess, that did at certain points look as though the Pope was actually being pushed around by the various parties on the day. And so this endless vacillation between rabbis on the one hand versus imams on the other, a visit to the Dome of the Rock on the one day, then the Western Wall on the other, that there were points at which it looked as though a kind of quid pro quo, which may well have distracted from some of the more substantive things that actually did take place, especially on Sunday.
Right, but I suppose this is the problem I see with it, is that that's the nature of the region.
Yeah,
that's the nature of everything is political. And to suggest, as I think I did see some Vatican people suggesting, that by doing certain things, particularly the prayer at the wall, when the wall is such a symbol of so much in the Palestinian territories, to see that as not a political act is to completely misunderstand the entire sociology of the Palestinian territories in Israel. So did he just get that wrong?
No, look, there's no indication that I can see that the Pope in any way misunderstood what it was that he was doing. The Vatican spokesman came out after the fact and said that what this in fact was is a demonstration of solidarity with the victims, in much the same way, for instance, as he visited on the Sunday a refugee camp for Palestinians, for displaced Palestinians, that this was an unguarded, deliberately unguarded, and again, I come back to this word, a kind of deliberately naive gesture of solidarity with those who suffered. Now look, well, at exactly the same time, I mean, he made extraordinary gestures and remarks at Vad Yashem, the great Holocaust memorial there in Jerusalem, saying that, you know, this was a boundless tragedy. This is almost unimaginable. At one point, he even said that it's hard to believe that even God could have imagined precisely the depths of the abyss into which
human beings. But I reckon that shows that he didn't get it. Because it's not about how big a deal the Holocaust was. That's not actually what he's got to do here, or what everyone is forced to do here, is choose a narrative, whether it's about security and terrorism on the one hand, or occupation and dispossession on the other. And it seems to me he ended up kind of just moving from one narrative to the other. He didn't articulate a reconciliation of those narratives, possibly because they don't exist.
Yeah. In the end, I couldn't agree more, but I think fundamentally that was probably not what the Pope was trying to do. I mean, one of the great criticisms of the chief rabbi of Rome, for instance, was that it's all well and good that Francis brings along his friends as a demonstration of kind of interfaith solidarity, but that has nothing to do with the realities on the ground. Probably one of the most significant things that did come out was the fact that he invited both Shimon Peres and Mahmoud Abbas to the Vatican for a joint prayer meeting precisely for peace. And so I think, you know, that is one of the more significant things that came out. And I think there he's trying to demonstrate that, you know, all the Pope really can do is to invite people to prayer.
Well, a third way is needed, and there are lots of voices there who are talking about that. So maybe he has a massive contribution to make in that. It is really interesting stuff. Scott, thank you very much for speaking to us. We'll speak next week. It's news time, 7 o'clock. See you soon.